Are you a scaling SaaS founder?
Ready to make the leap from leading a team to leading an organization? Join us each week as we refill your think tank with actionable tips and strategies from great business minds you know and those you don't know yet. This is SaaS Fuel with your host, five-time entrepreneur, SaaS founder, and globetrotting adventurer, Jeff Mains.
Welcome back to the SaaS Fuel podcast, where growing together is like assembling a superhero team for the business world. Every partnership is a new power-up. I'm your host, Jeff Mains. I hope B2B SaaS founders like you grow from traction to scale. Here, growth is more than just numbers. It's about crafting a future-proof company, premium valuation, and leaders who build a business of significance while living epic, adventurous lives. How did you get your first customers or users? Did you give it away to a beta test, trial, sell to a warm audience that you knew, or maybe it was completely cold? Building a SaaS that solves the problem is only half the battle. The other half is effectively selling the solutions that you built. It's a delicate dance between innovation and persuasion, where success hinges not on just what you create, but how you bring it to market. Last year, I was with a few extremely smart people working on a product extension, more of a companion product, to solve a very specific, very obvious problem with healthcare billing. And over the course of a week, we designed it, mapped out use cases, and we're all ready to start development. But before pulling the trigger, I set up some meetings with people I know and trust in the industry to get their take and make sure that what we designed actually fit the bill. And a few meetings turned into a dozen. And the consensus, we absolutely nailed it. This was a solution that was elegant and effective and really solved the problem really well. I mean, like, this is awesome. And so did we build it? You know, is it done? What's the story? No, actually we didn't. Why not? Well, stick around. I'll tell you the rest of the story. But let's take a minute and explore the art and science of developing solutions that resonate with customers and the strategies for selling them effectively. Number one is to know your customer. And I mean, really know your customer. So the first step in building solutions that sell is to deeply understand your customer's needs and pain points. And sometimes I talk about it as being able to articulate it better than they can themselves. You explain the pain point, and they're like, wow, you're reading my mind. That's exactly it. Figuring that out is like being a detective, piecing together clues to uncover what truly matters to your target audience. It involves empathetic listening, market research, and an iterative approach to product development. And we did that part pretty well. I made the mistake not doing it before, and ouch, that's some painful mistakes. But when you solve a real problem for your customers, you create a solution that sells itself. Number two is crafting a compelling value proposition, making it irresistible. Once you build the solution, the next step is to articulate value in a way that resonates with your customers. And that means going beyond features and focusing on benefits. What does it give them? Your value proposition has to clearly communicate how your solution makes your customers' lives better, easier, or more profitable, or better, all of the above. It's your bridge between your product and your customers' needs and what turns interest into action. And we really nailed that, all except for one tiny thing. So it's pretty good. And number three is effective go-to-market and sales strategy. With a solution that meets a genuine need and compelling value proposition, you're ready to sell, right? Effective sales strategies are about more than just pitching. It's about building relationships, understanding your customers, their buying journey, and providing value at every single touch point. Whether it's through, you know, consultative selling, content marketing, leveraging customer testimonials, whatever it is that you're doing as part of your go-to-market, the goal is to build trust and demonstrate that your solution is the best fit for their needs. You got to bridge that trust gap. So our solution checked the boxes. It seems like a great fit. So why didn't we do it? It was actually a little problem in number one and a tiny thing in number two that really is not so tiny. The thing was, the end user, major beneficiary, and the people who loved the idea weren't the same ones who would write the check. The benefits weren't necessarily for the buyer. So the beneficiary and the buyer are kind of two different constituencies. And as it turns out, this gross inefficiency really benefited the buyer, the company that would have to write the check for the solution, and benefited. So this is the problem number two, benefited them like millions of dollars a year. So if we're trying to say this is going to make you more profitable, no, it's actually going to take millions of dollars out of your pocket. And the reason the problem hasn't been solved is because there is a strong disincentive to solve it. Hey, why don't you pay and buy this solution and give up millions in revenue? No thanks. So the project was tabled, at least for now. But this was a case where the problem was absolutely clear. The solution was great. And the initial feedback was overwhelmingly positive. You know, they're all go signals. But building great solutions and selling them are two different things. But those two things have to go together in order to build a successful company. Have you ever built anything that didn't sell? I certainly have. Or maybe sold something that wasn't built. I might have done that one too. Well, drop me a note in the comments. Tell me what happened. How did that work out? Our expert last week was Morgan McCoy, founder of Bragg & Wright Consulting. We had a great back and forth about equitable compensation, negotiating, goals, performance reviews, and leading high-performing teams as well. Our founder last Tuesday was Wes Bush. He is the founder and CEO of Product Led. Wes is the best-selling author of Product-Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself. We, of course, talked about product-led growth, how to do it well, where things go sideways, and what doesn't work. If you missed either of those episodes, go back and give them a listen. Well worth your time. My guest today is Derek Osgood, once a marketing executive at giants like PlayStation, now pioneers Ignition, founder and CEO of Ignition, a collaborative go-to-market platform that accelerates product launches for marketing and product teams. Derek was an early hire at Rippling, where he stood up the product marketing function and helped scale the company to 20 million ARR, and has successfully launched over 100 products, generating over $1 billion in revenue. It's pretty darn good. With Ignition, he is crafting the very tool he wanted at every launch. Welcome a guy who helps you build what sells and sell what you built, Derek Osgood. Hey, Derek, welcome to SaaS Fuel.
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to dig in here.
Love to hear a little bit about your background. I mean, marketing, your time at Rippling, and now a founder.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my background, basically, I've run, you know, both marketing and product teams throughout the Valley. You know, early on in my career, I was actually a PM at PlayStation launching big AAA games, which is really fun. Nice. It was a blast. Gave me like tons of cool exposure to really what really good kind of go-to-market processes looked like at, you know, pretty high-end launch factory. And then, you know, basically ever since I've been, you know, in and around venture-backed startups. So I did, you know, a lot of early stage stuff across a range of different industries, leading marketing teams from, you know, payments to field service management to mobile apps, and then ended up joining BBVA, which is a big Spanish bank, in the innovation arm, leading marketing growth for a lot of the companies that we had either incubated in-house or acquired or invested in. And then, you know, basically after that, ended up joining Rippling, joined them at seed stage, helped them scale up from there through Series B, stood up the product marketing function there. I was also the only person with like product in my title for most of the time I was there. So I was doing a lot of product work as well. And then ended up leaving, you know, there in 2020 to go start the platform that I wish that I had along the way with Ignition, which, you know, is basically a platform for helping to manage the build and launch process around, you know, new product initiatives, you know, productizing a lot of the experience that I've had building out this go-to-market motion at both small and large companies, you know, as a product marketer.
And that's really good. I love the alignment between them. What have you seen that is you know, been the breakdown that your product really solves between product marketing and sales when you're launching something new?
I mean, there's so many breakdowns. It's funny. I was talking to a CMO today and, you know, he basically was just like, there's so many breakpoints at every single point of this process. Fundamentally, it all boils down to a combination of lack of repeatable process, poor siloing of data, and then, you know, poor communication across these teams. And so, you know, basically like the handoff, the primary breakdown point tends to be the handoff from product to the marketing team and like saying, hey, this thing that we built is actually ready to launch. And, you know, then passing all the context that, you know, those downstream customer teams need in order to be able to effectively sell the thing. And then going the other direction, you know, that break, that kind of crevasse in the middle exists when it comes to getting feedback back from the market into product's hands and making sure that they're building things that are going to actually sell. You know, like we bill our whole product as like a platform for helping people, you know, build what sells and sell what they built, because most of this is crossing that divide between, you know, the teams that are building the thing and the teams that are actually responsible for getting it into customers' hands. You know, that breaks down because companies just don't have a process for this. They don't have any kind of repeatable motion for launching things. There's a lot of moving parts when it comes to bringing something to market, from your strategic planning and documentation around messaging and positioning, to creating the actual collateral that's going to be used to promote it, to getting all of that passed across all the different teams that need different subsets of information within that broader go-to-market plan. And, you know, it's just really hard to get that information from the people who are like at the nucleus of that process and responsible for planning into the hands of the people who are then going to be talking to customers about it on a day in, day out basis. And, you know, the person, the product marketer or whoever is actually responsible for driving the launch, they end up having to pull all these different threads together, jump between a bunch of different tools to get information, collate it into a cohesive go-to-market strategy. And then they end up basically blasting a ton of individualized emails to all the different teams involved in the process, like sales, the exec teams, the different marketing functions within the company. And it's so that they can inform those teams on, okay, how are we messaging, positioning this product? Who's it for? How are we actually rolling it out and bringing it to market? And then making sure that those teams are actually aware of what they need to do in that process and actually getting it done. So there's a combination of like strategic information and enablement and the actual program management of bringing, of making sure that all the things are actually moving together in sync on time.
Yeah. I've been really surprised, I mean, over the last 4 or 5 years, how many companies and even big companies, you talk to product, you talk to sales, you talk to marketing, and you ask them a simple question like, you know, who's the ICP? And you get 3 different answers. Or you get, you know, what problem does this solve? And you get 10 different answers.
It's one of the funniest things. Like I go into every company that I've joined, you know, I go in and oftentimes you'll go talk to the CEO and you're like, hey, CEO, okay, you know, does everybody actually know how we're positioning this product? And they're like, yeah, everybody totally.
Of course they do. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Everybody knows exactly who we're building for. They know exactly the problem that we're solving. And then, yeah. And so their perception when you come in as a product marketer is, oh no, we don't need to do a positioning exercise. We don't need to like think about messaging right now. Everybody gets that. And then you go talk to all those teams and you're just like, hey, regurgitate to me. What are we building? Who are we building it for? How do we position it? Why are we different from the other players in the space? And you get a different answer from every single person that you talk to. And it's incredibly hard to align these teams effectively around this because there is no real source of truth for your product strategy and your product information.
Yeah, I think that the bigger the company gets, the more that kind of gets watered down. And CEOs, it's really difficult. And founders, because, you know, we think that, you know, everybody on the founding team knew and it's been communicated. So where did it get lost? I mean, it's like, I told you once, and why don't you get it?
Yeah. When you're in your little echo chamber to it, you know, the CEO is in many companies, like, they're not really talking to every single person on the team. They should be, but you know, oftentimes they're so busy dealing with the exec team that they, you know, those people are much closer to it. So they may be pretty in sync, but then as you get layers and layers down within the organization, it just gets watered down more and more. And so nobody ends up speaking the same language.
Yeah. Especially once you get that second layer. I mean, maybe as a founder, you have the first layer of leadership, but once you get that second layer and they have reports underneath them, then it gets much, much more. I mean, I have to say infinitely more difficult to just keep that messaging. It has to be very intentional. So how do you solve that? That's a complex problem. How does Ignition solve that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you think about who knows the ICP, who knows the messaging positioning, there's obviously the CEO has probably got the best handle on it, but then you have the product marketing team, and they're typically the ones who are the ones responsible for owning that information and driving it across the organization. And so if you think about the best organizations that do this, it's similar to a CEO recommunicating their vision constantly. You know, every single all you get on as a CEO, you should be like, regurgitating the same exact story about why are you building this thing? Who are you building it for? Why is it important? That sort of thing.
Yep.
As a product marketer, it's the same deal. You need to be pulsing information outwards across the organization. And a lot of teams, where their failure point is that they basically try and build this process around tools that require other teams to come seek it out, to seek out the information. And so, you know, the product team will build a roadmap. And that roadmap's great. The sales team wants to know the roadmap. They want to know what they can be communicating to customers. Customer success wants to know what's actually launched recently so they can update customers. The problem is that none of those teams are, you know, the reality is they're humans and they have other priorities. They're not proactive about going and seeking that information out, even if it exists somewhere. So one of the things that Ignition does fairly uniquely relative to any other tools out there is that, like, we built the whole product with outbound enablement in mind. And so we build this kind of source of truth where we house all of your messaging, all of your positioning, all of your roadmaps. So we created vertical tools where the product team can do all of their roadmapping in the product. The product marketing team can do all of their go-to-market planning. There's a really clean, seamless handoff between those where context flows from roadmap to go-to-market plan. And then we make it really easy for that person who's responsible for driving the launch and the actual enablement across the company to push information outwards in different configurations to those different teams. So we can basically set up pulsing motions where you're constantly updating sales, success, et cetera. What are the things that are launching? How do you talk about them? What's the messaging? What assets are actually available to promote those launches? So that they have a really clean, nice packet that lives either in their CRM or in their email inbox that contains all the information that they need in order to be able to actually go sell that thing. And so we make it really easy to push that information outwards. We also go the other direction and make it really easy to inform that planning by pulling back all of the information from customer conversations and market intel. So we're basically, we have research tools baked into the platform that help bubble up the insights that are going to then drive better roadmaps, drive better go-to-market plans. So we're like plugging into all the different parts of the organization in a way that no other tool really does.
Yeah, that's really helpful because I just love that the core premise, and that is building products that sell and selling products that you built.
Yeah.
And there's such a disconnect in that where, you know, sales is selling one thing and then development goes, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Something got lost in the translation of what that was. The position.
And the best microcosm of it is like customers ask for things and then that customer never gets told or it may never get built. And if it does get built, that customer who asked for the thing in the first place often never gets told that it got built. And so one very like small little microcosm within our product of this broader, you know, workflow is that like when it comes to roadmapping, what we do is we plug into your customer conversations. We use AI to extract from those customer conversations any feature requests that have been brought up by customers. Turn that into a roadmap. When that roadmap item that's a feature request from a customer gets marked as done, we've already married the CRM data for that customer's account to the roadmap item. And then we'll go back to the sales reps who are responsible for that customer account and we'll ping them with an email that says, hey, sales rep, you have two deals that just got unblocked because this feature shipped. So you should go cross sell, upsell, or notify that customer. And so we make it a really tight feedback loop between customers asking for things, those things getting built, and then those things actually shipping and getting notified back to customers.
I love that. And does that same thing work with not existing customers, with prospects? I mean, you mentioned, yeah, you know, deal blockers. That happens on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. So like we plug into your CRM data and we'll read all of the emails and deal notes from that CRM data. So as your sales team is tracking those deals, we're surfacing features that may be blocking those deals. And then again, we're going back to those reps and saying, hey, you know, sales rep, like this deal that you're in process with just got unblocked because this thing shipped.
That's really helpful in the sales process. So what's a funny story that you can share about a mismatch between product and marketing and sales?
Oh, man. I mean, I've got so many. I think, you know, the funny thing about this process is like, I feel like it doesn't surface in like really nice, cleanly packaged stories because it takes place over such a long period. period of time.
Sure.
You know, you end up with, I have horror stories up the wazoo where like product built something, it ended, usually the way that this plays out is, you know, product built it and then it showed up in a demo and, you know, the sales team is suddenly trying to wave some magic wands and play some movie magic to make it seem like they know what they're talking about with this prospect. And then what ends up happening is like, I, as the product marketer, who's the person who's theoretically responsible for telling sales that this thing shipped, like I didn't even get told by product that it actually ended up getting shipped. And so then sales comes back to me and they're like, hey, what is this thing? Why do I look like an idiot on the sales call in front of a customer and not know how to talk about it? And basically that's like the constant feedback loop where it's, I'm getting bashed by sales for not telling them that the thing existed, but then I'm going back to product bashing them for not telling me that it existed so that I could tell sales. And that has played out at every single company that I've been at. It's just constant. Yeah. And it's, I think there's, I don't know if I have a like great off the cuff story that plays into that, but it's like that same motion over and over again. And I think anybody who's been in these roles, like they know that it's like Groundhog's Day. It's every company that you go to, it's got those exact same batch of problems.
So what makes a great rollout? What does that look like? You launched 100 plus products. What does that look like? What is a great rollout?
Yes. I mean, like I mentioned, I think one of the big things that companies just don't do effectively with this process is that they don't actually think of it as a rollout, right? You know, like a lot of companies, what they do is the product team, you know, there's been this big shift recently towards, you know, agile development and, you know, product teams shipping something and getting it in market and then just iterating based on customer feedback. And that's great. Believe in that. But the reality is that that's not very customer friendly. So a really good rollout actually has one, a consistent release cadence. So ideally, you know, your product team, the one of the things to keep in mind is like separate the idea of releasing the product or feature to production and launching it, which is actually announcing it to customers, right? So those two things do not have to be directly tied to each other. You can release something before you launch it. You can also release something after you launch it. So you can make an announcement before or after. It doesn't have to land on the same day that the release happens. So what I typically recommend to companies is that they have a consistent release cadence where releases are happening always on, let's say, Thursdays. And that way, customers know to look for new things on that Thursday. And then you ideally have a rollout process where you are actually following a true alpha, beta, GA process, where you're ideally shipping that alpha product to internal teams and like really close customers and design partners who have explicitly asked for that feature. You're collecting a lot of feedback and hammering out all the kinks with that very small subset of your audience. Then you're moving into a beta process and actually launching it to, you know, again, like an opted in set of customers that you know are friendly, that you know are going to be able to give you effective feedback and really tightly fit the ICP for what you've built. And then you're rolling out into a broader GA process. And most companies don't follow that structure, and they should. And within those stages, there's a lot of back-end go-to-market planning that's happening in parallel. So as you're rolling out to your alpha process is when you're doing all of your top of like front-end market research. So you're understanding like who's your competitive set? Why is your product different or product or feature different from that competitive set or better? You're understanding like, okay, what are customers saying about those, about your product today, about the new product that you're launching in that alpha period? So you really need to have a very strong voice of customer process in place to be able to collect that feedback and actually turn it into actionable changes to the product that you're shipping. And then as you start moving into beta is when you're really starting to firm up the ICP, the messaging, the positioning, getting all that kind of core strategic information in place, and you're training the sales team. Like so many companies just skip the entire sales training process and they just launch the thing and they never actually go and tell sales or customer success, who are the people who are going to have to talk to customers day in, day out about why that thing is important. So sales doesn't feel confident when it actually launches in talking about it. And they just don't talk about it for 6 months, 12 months until they've seen enough customers talk to them about it that they feel like they can confidently regurgitate what customers are saying. So you're training sales, and then, you know, you do the bigger, the actual launch itself and launch day when you actually move to general availability. And that's, you know, you're multi-channel, you're pinging customers with lots of different touch points. And then it's a rolling thunder approach where you're continuously reminding customers that thing launched after launch day too. So I think about like launches and rollouts, a lot of teams think about them as purely like the launch day. How are we getting to that announcement and making sure that we like ticked the box and launched it? But you got to remember that like customers have goldfish brains and they forget about these things. So you got to continuously remind them of the thing that you built over a longer period of time than just the day of launch.
Sure. I think that happens a lot. Things are launched and then they're not used. And then you get, you know, support requests and it's like your feature request. It's like, yep. Oh, we did that 2 years ago. Yep. We just didn't tell anybody about it.
Yeah. And like, you didn't tell anybody about it, or you told them about it once in one email, right, and didn't open it and they didn't read it. And, you know, or they just opened it, forgot about it, and then never came back to it because it wasn't urgent at that point. Yeah. It's really easy for this stuff to get lost and people forget about that. You know, they think that like they've ticked the box and it's been launched. And so it's no longer needs to be promoted.
Right. Picture this, your entire team aligned and unstoppable, building a future-proof business with total clarity on what success looks like, not only for their role, but the entire company. It's easier than you think with Champion Leadership Group. Whether growth is booming, a little flat, or you feel like your solution is the world's best-kept secret, we've got you covered. Ditch those time-sucking spreadsheets for a SaaS operating system that turbocharges your team with scorecards and KPIs, and makes leading the company 10 times easier and you as a leader 20 times more effective. Add to that a community of scaling founders and on-demand access to a fractional C-suite. It's all designed to unlock your company's full potential, support higher valuation, and elevate you from engaged operator to empowered owner. Say goodbye to manual madness and hello to world-class business operations. Now is the time to upgrade from traction to scale. Learn more at championleadership.com, where leaders evolve and companies transform. Yeah, and in fact, it really hasn't been promoted at all. I think a lot of companies, we've definitely done that, where, you know, release something and, you know, and it is one of those things. It's in the release notes. Didn't you look at that?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I think there's a lot of folks out there today that, you know, if you look at kind of product management thought leadership, if you look at product marketing thought leadership, you know, there's two sides of this. A lot of people are believers that launches are not important because, you know, the majority of the growth happens post-launch. And my philosophy on this is that like launch in the way that they are using the word, you're right, it's not really that important. The day of launch is really not that special. And if you're going to drive like a nice spike in usage, and you're going to drive a nice spike in new user signups, but launch is really about all that work leading up to launch day. It's about all the strategic development that identifies like who your customers are, what they care about, how you're positioning this product. And then post-launch, it's about the actual growth support that you're providing for that thing. So like, I think about launch as much more of a holistic go-to-market process than just like the day of launch. And the launch itself actually is really impactful. It gives you that initial juice of users that you can then turn into advocates. You can, they lay the foundation for the entire future growth motion that you have.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to think about it, where it's launch is not an event. It's something that you're doing constantly. It's the go-to-market motion. It's the entire process, not just a one-day thing of we shipped it.
Yep. Yeah, and it's like you're doing a bunch of mini launches. Like when you think about launching a product, for example, that's actually its own holistic product, you're launching that product, and then you're launching a bunch of updates to that product over a period of time. You may be launching new features. You may be launching add-on products. You may be launching just new messages or ways of talking about that product or new pricing models for it. So one product launch can actually, you know, take place over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years with just a bunch of little micro launches that are supporting it on an ongoing basis. You know, again, like I think about launch much more as like the go-to-market process, like you said, and it's a rollout that is not just a one-day event.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's been a shift a little bit in a good way to really thinking more about product marketing more holistically, like you're talking about. If companies are on the fence or they're like, I'm not sure that we're ready to have somebody that is a product owner or really, you know, product marketing, it's just a hybrid thing, or somebody fills into that a little bit, what would you tell them? Why should they do it, or should they, or how do they know when they're ready?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, so from a pure product marketing hiring perspective, like, I'm a big believer that your first marketer in most cases should be a product marketer, because realistically, like, most of the problems that early stage companies are wrestling with are fundamental go-to-market strategy problems of, like, yes, who's our ICP, you know, what's our messaging, how are we telling our story? And that's the stuff that product marketing is really good at. And product marketing can also be, you know, a jack of all trades when it comes to all the other marketing activity that's being done. And, you know, you can always backfill some of the acquisition and demand gen work through kind of external contractors and that sort of thing on a more part-time basis. So I typically say, look, you know, if you are wrestling with ICP questions, messaging questions, like, you should probably be looking at hiring a product marketer, and that should happen earlier than you think that it should. In the interim, though, I think a lot of companies do pretty well if they have a product person. Oftentimes, product people have some degree of product marketing experience, and they can pinch hit and play that role early on. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, for the earliest stages of a company, like, the CEO is the product marketer and the product manager, right? Like, they're the person who really needs to define who are we, why are we important, how do we actually roll out the things that we built. But, you know, I'm seeing it more and more out there today is, like, the roles of product management and the role of product marketing, they're converging a lot, you know. And, like, when I grew up in my early days at PlayStation, you know, I was in a role that was titled brand management, which was fundamentally product management plus product marketing in one role. And I think you're seeing, I mean, like, Airbnb just made this shift to basically, you know, turn product managers into, they've titled them product marketers, and they're now responsible for this whole process holistically from building to launching the things that they built. And I think you're seeing a lot more companies, especially with all the layoffs that are happening, moving to a motion that requires these two teams to be much closer together, if not even being, like, the same exact role.
Yeah. So how do you position a product in today's crowded market? What is it that makes it stand out? How do you really make a splash, you know, at launch and beyond?
It's hard. I mean, the market has obviously gotten more and more competitive, and, you know, there's a lot of samey messaging. I mean, the biggest thing is, especially in the early days, you know, when you reach a certain degree of scale, there's a lot of positioning angles that you can play around with around, you know, being a leader in a space, or being, you know, having, you know, you can just position purely around social proof, and, you know, you don't even really need to have really incisive differentiated positioning, because you can just play the we're the winners card. But when you're early on, the biggest mistake that companies make is they try and really lean into overly benefit oriented messaging, in the sense that, you know, they're getting so far towards the, like, downstream impact of the thing that they're building in their top level messaging, that they're positioning around, like, oh, we're gonna help you grow revenue. But, like, every product claims to help you grow revenue. It's not exactly differentiated whatsoever. So you actually need to provide the best framework that I use for this. You need to provide some differentiated value claim. So you need to actually say, okay, like, what is the one thing that makes us truly different from, you know, whatever our segment is? And so you need to identify what's the status quo that's being used today. What are the alternatives to your product that customers might be evaluating? Identify, like, one, maybe two things that make you truly unique and different from them. And it doesn't matter if those are the most important part of your product, they're the thing that makes you different. And you can always say, look, like, we do all this other stuff that's important to this category, but this is why to buy us. And then from there, you need to provide, you know, what I call, like, reasons to believe. And so you have your top level value proposition, which is your kind of single unique claim to fame. And then you need to provide a lot of, like, really tangible, concrete reasons to believe that value prop. And that those reasons to believe could be characteristics of the founding team. You know, it could be, like, you're a founder that has worked in this industry for 35 years and you have deep domain expertise. It could be the fact that your product uses some unique technology that, like, enables what you're able to do. It could be a specific feature and a specific workflow in your product that unlocks that value. And the big thing is make a clear value claim that's unique and differentiated, and then support that with really tangible, concrete reasons to believe why that value prop is true.
Yeah. When you're launching Ignition, was it easier or was it harder that, you know, for it being your own product and doing the same things out to the market, because you had all the internal knowledge and, you know, you're taking and doing a launch yourself?
Honestly, I joke all the time. I feel like we break all the rules that I just told you when it comes to Ignitions. You know, like we're a unique case in the sense that we're building a pretty compound product. Like we have multiple different categories of tools that are all mashed together into one big platform that creates this end-to-end workflow. There's a lot of complexity to it that, you know, covers everything from researching your market to building your product to launching it. And, you know, essentially that throws out the window all of the like core positioning best practices where, you know, you want to identify a really narrow ICP that's one specific role within one specific industry segment and speak directly to them with one very clear specific feature that's going to be like the 10x thing that is unique and different about you. And that's not really doable with our space because our product spans the entire company's worth of teams. You know, like we work with like the product team, the product marketing team, the product or the sales team, the marketing team. And so we actually have to speak to multiple different personas. And the way that we've done that is by verticalizing a lot of our messaging. And so, you know, we've created landing pages, we've created specific kind of front doors for each of those teams that can be much more narrowly defined. And we've created positioning statements for each of those specific teams and use cases that then basically roll up to a much more kind of genericized overall story about our platform, which is, you know, this, we help align product marketing and sales teams. And so we break all those rules. You know, we use this platform level messaging that spans multiple different personas. We have, you know, we are like speaking at a very high level when we talk about the product in aggregate, and then we get down into much more granular messaging for each individual use case.
And that makes sense because it is very broad. I mean, you're replacing multiple point solutions with one thing that's completely integrated. And so it does touch multiple departments. Does that make sales difficult? Because you're probably who you're selling to, your buyer's not necessarily the end user in every case because you've got multiple departments using it. Have you found that difficult or easy?
It definitely makes it hard. I mean, like I joke all the time, we're playing SaaS on hard mode. You know, we are spanning multiple personas, we're building multiple products, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, like we deal with product marketing. I mean, like product marketing tends to be, you know, our kind of primary champion within companies, and product marketing teams oftentimes don't own their own budget. You know, they're like an orphan child sitting under marketing or product, or they might be off on their own. And, you know, they oftentimes don't actually have the end economic buyer buying power to be able to sign off on something. They have to go use a lot of their social credit or social influence within the company to get product into the conversation, to get marketing into the conversation. So we actually end up having to sell this kind of a multi-persona, multi-threaded deal process where, you know, we're pulling in multiple teams into the conversation, which is much harder. And it's definitely not easy. And I would tell any company out there not to go down that route. The only reason I have felt somewhat comfortable doing it is it's very similar to our process at Rippling. You know, like we were following a lot of similar types of product structure and go-to-market motion. And, you know, I've got a bit of experience doing it, but it makes it way harder. It's not easy. And, you know, like you, no matter how many times I can tell a team that we initially engage with, hey, you don't need to go get this other team involved in order to be able to use this product and get value out of it. The perception is that they still do because this is such a cross-functional process. And, you know, even if I tell them, hey, like buy us by yourself, they will oftentimes like still feel the need to go and bring in another team into the conversation. And a lot of that conversation happens in the background. It doesn't happen in a sales call where I can help control the conversation. It happens, you know, in the company. And, you know, then I get an email back that says, hey, wasn't able to get buy-in from that other team. You know, they're like unclear on the value prop, blah, blah, blah. And it's, I get that other team on a call 2 months later and they're like, oh my God, I love this.
Yeah.
And it's because they weren't actually getting the pitch from us, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's almost like that they really need this in there so they can sell your product to the rest of the teams. Yeah. So that, that message is communicated throughout the organization. That's funny.
Yeah. It makes the sales process hard though. Like I definitely, it's challenging. And you know, like I said, like I break all of my own rules when it comes to our product. I would not necessarily recommend that as the go-to-market motion for most companies.
So what's been the greatest challenge as a startup founder in building Ignition?
I mean, I think for us, like the biggest challenge is a positioning challenge. It's like purely just how do you encapsulate this process that like spans in many cases, multiple months of planning cycles, spans multiple different teams, spans a ton of different like individualized work, you know, from competitive intel to customer research, to road mapping, to actually handing off the roadmap to the marketing team, to the actual go-to-market planning. How do you encapsulate that in a really crisp, you know, like soundbite that cover that you can share in an email to somebody that you're outbounding to, that you can share in, you know, on a call like this, where I'm just explaining what we do. And, you know, this is like the fundamental challenge with marketing platforms is conveying a really crisp, differentiated message of what that thing is at the highest level. You know, like you can get into really specific positioning and messaging around the sub products, and that's easy, but the high level messaging and positioning, it's really easy for it to get watered down. And that's been, you know, our cross to bear since day zero. And it's like just a tough characteristic of our space. So I think that's been the hardest part. The other hard part's just been navigating, you know, the selling motion, you know, when, like I mentioned, you know, a lot of times our champion is part of the reason that we pick product marketing is because there's no tools built for them. They're a really underserved market. They feel a ton of affinity for our product. The challenge is like they're a challenging buyer because they don't necessarily have a lot of budget. And so how do you help enable that team to go buy a tool when they're not used to buying tools in the first place? So that's been its own challenge as well.
Yeah. Any bold or unconventional approaches that you've taken in product marketing for your own or for your clients?
I think fun story actually from like my earlier startup days, you know, talking about the whole reasons to believe concept when it comes to positioning. I was working for a mobile keyboard app developer called Flexi, and basically, you know, the mobile keyboard app space, it's all based on like how fast do you, like how good is your autocorrect? How fast do you help people to type, right? And every single company in that space is making the exact same claim. We're the fastest keyboard. We're the one that like will help you type the fastest, blah, blah, blah. Really hard to actually prove that, right? You know, until somebody gets into it and uses it. So one of the things that we did was that was very unique is we actually went and found a user of ours who happened to just type really fast. And he was this kid in Brazil. And we basically flew him up to New York and we said, hey, we're going to break a Guinness World Record. And so we went out to Guinness World Records and we proposed the fastest typing Guinness World Record. And we had him break it and we turned it into a whole campaign. We built out like a bunch of videos. We turned it into a press campaign and we broke this Guinness World Record. And then we plastered that award all over all of the marketing materials that we created. And it worked like a charm because it helped give some kind of third party credibility to the claim that we were making that we're the fastest keyboard, but we actually had a tangible thing to back that up and reinforce that we were the fastest keyboard and nobody else could compete with that. And so that is like probably one of the more unique things that, you know, we've done from a product marketing perspective in my past.
I love that. Yeah. Really, really demonstrating what everybody else is claiming. It's, you know, world's best coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I walked by 10 coffee shops that said that, but you actually got the Guinness World Record to prove it now.
Yeah, if you walk by 10 coffee shops and they all say world's best coffee, but then one of them's got a Michelin star, you're like, okay, that one's probably the one that's the world's best coffee.
Yeah. Well, what's the most valuable lesson you've learned about leadership during your journey with Ignition, and how has that shaped the way that you lead your team?
I mean, I think like one of the biggest ones that I've learned, and this is like through both Ignition, but then, you know, previous to that too, is I'm a big believer in the idea of, you know, don't hire smart people to tell them what to do. Hire smart people to have them tell you what to do. And, you know, every time that we have brought somebody onto the team, I make a really concerted effort to try and extract their insight into what we're doing well, what we're not doing well. And I actively seek out negative feedback. And I think it's like really hard for a lot of people to do that, especially founders, because, you know, you're product and your company, it's your baby. And, you know, it's like really hard to hear, oh, like this thing's super broken. Oh, you've done a really bad job on this part of the product, like that sort of thing. And it's tough to hear that, but it's the thing that makes the best companies. If you are able to actually surface those insights and make sure that everybody across the team feels comfortable sharing that kind of feedback and feels empowered to actually take action to solve for those things on their own without needing your implicit approval or explicit approval, then your company just operates so much faster. Your team feels way more engaged and you come out with better thinking because, you know, as founders, we don't have all the answers. And I think it's really easy to forget that.
Without a doubt. Well, where can people learn more about you and about Ignition online?
Yeah, Ignition's at haveignition.com is our website. And if you want to get in touch with me, my email is derek@haveignition.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn. I think my handle there is DerekOsgood3. So love to hear from you.
Very good. We'll make sure to link all of that in the show notes. Derek, great topics today. I mean, so much good insight about launching. And one last question. I have to put this in there. How did your experience at PlayStation affect launches going forward? Because that's, you know, launches there are got to be like nowhere else.
Yeah, it's so fun. I mean, like, it's incredible, right? Like, PlayStation, I think, is probably, you know, short of maybe Apple, I think they are one of the very best companies on the planet when it comes to launching stuff. Because, like, the sales process for video games is so unique. Because you really only have a 30-day window to sell most of the product. Like everything, you know, sales drop off a cliff after 30, 60, 90 days. And so the launch is everything. It's like, how much can you build up hype in advance of the launch? And so one of the things I learned there was like the importance of actually pre-launch promotion and not just like waiting until the thing is actually live in order to ship it, building actual excitement and anticipation among customers up front helps to then have a drastically bigger amplifying effect on all the other work that's happening. The other thing that I learned was the importance of a rigorous process. It's like when we were launching stuff, our launch process was so tight because we had done all that important critical strategic planning work up front. We had informed all of it with lots of research. So we were not just flying blind and like guessing at things. We were actually shipping something based on real market insight with really defined positioning that everybody across the company was speaking exactly the same language because we had put so much effort into enablement around it. And it just, you know, the importance of upfront planning and internal marketing leading into that launch, like the actual external marketing portion of things was so unimportant relative to the internal enablement, internal promotion of it, because the teams that were internal are the ones that then drove all the external promotion. Yeah, it was a bunch of stuff. I mean, like I just saw what good looked like at a whole nother level that I've very rarely seen in other tech companies that I've joined. And, you know, I've tried to instill that kind of rigor and process at every company that I've gone to.
Very cool. Well, that's definitely the kind of team I would want to launch in my product. So if that's you too, then haveignition.com.
Yeah.
So Derek, great talking with you today. Thanks for being on SaaS Fuel.
Likewise, Jeff. Much appreciated. And it was a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Derek, for coming on the show and sharing your journey and insights. You can learn more about Derek and Ignition at haveignition.com. As always, all links, highlights, resources, and full show notes are available at sasfuel.com. If you're getting value from the show, share it with a friend. They'll appreciate it, and it just elevates your status in their eyes because you know about something cool before they did. Everyone who shares this week gets a feature fireworks launcher. It's a tool that helps you highlight your product's features in a way that's as dazzling and attention-grabbing as a fireworks display. Join us Thursday on our SaaS Fuel Expert Series, where my guest is Ryan Staley, founder and CEO of Whalebots. Ryan is a top thought leader on AI for revenue growth. We'll be talking sales, marketing, AI for revenue leaders, and exactly what works today in the sales marketplace and why. And, you know, maybe we'll come up with some bad use cases for AI also. And next Tuesday, we have founder Roland Seeblink, a three-time tech founder who has elevated three companies to unicorn status. We'll see if we can get a little bit of that unicorn magic to rub off. I will see you next time. And as always, enjoy the journey.
Thanks for listening to SaaS Fuel. full show notes for each episode, which includes a summary, key takeaways, quotes, and any resources mentioned, are available at sasfuel.com. Be sure to follow and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the content and getting value from these episodes, please leave us a rating and review at ratethispodcast.com/sasfuel. We'll be sure to read these out on future episodes.